Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Boring, isn't it, this sport? Nothing really to talk about. Just an extraordinary amount of discussion to be had about so many different matches that we saw take place over the last 24 hours. I think we'll start with the team that many describe as the best in the world at the moment. They certainly weren't, were they? As they lost 4-1 against Hoffenheim. That is their 23-match winning streak broken. Here to discuss it, Stevie Nicol and Casey Keller. Casey, what I thought was really interesting about this game is that 4-1 actually flattered Bayern.
Yeah, no question. The way that Hoffenheim kind of set themselves up, it was obviously that Hoeneß had an idea of how to get over his uncle's side. That they'd sit back just a little bit, but then pressure in spots, knowing that Bayern was going to have this really high line. They knew they had the pace. They had the ability to get in behind at will in this match. Just a little few little long balls, couple little flicks, and before you knew it, the scoreline was where it really deserved to be. Neuer still made a couple big saves that he needed to make to keep him within the game. But then as it just progressed, Bayern had to throw more numbers forward, had to give more space in the back, and Hoffenheim just took advantage of it. Kamaric was phenomenal again, as he has been going back to the end of the last season, and they really made Bayern pay.
It just seems to be that one move, Stevie, that just tore them all apart. Long ball flick on Bosch.
Well, it seems simple, long ball flick on Bosch, but when you've got one team who are at it, who are concentrated and who can't wait to get into the fight, and obviously that's Hoffenheim, and you've got a Bayern side who clearly were thinking about the Super Cup medals they picked up during the week. It was just one of those days. Other than Neuer, everybody was pretty awful. Absolutely nothing. They got outplayed. They got outthought, outsmarted, outcoached. I mean, just you name it. And that back line was absolutely atrocious. Alaba, who has been sensational, and Boateng, who seemed to have had a little bit of a second coming. Well, I tell you what, they got exposed big time and... Yeah, as you said, 4-1, very flattering.
But Stevie, like others, I suppose, Casey could offer up the Super Cup as the distraction. This was just merely a hangover, nothing to panic about. Is that the same sheet that you're reading from?
Yeah, I wouldn't panic over anything. I mean, Bayern just broke a 23-match streak. I mean, what is there to get panicky about? I mean, just go in and reboot a little bit and figure out that what's rule number one of any great side? You have to match the energy of the opponent that you're playing against. And then after that, let your skill, let your better players do the talking. Well, Hoffenheim had the more energy. Bayern wasn't there. Maybe there was a hangover from Wednesday. They made some changes. The changes didn't really help them a whole lot and give Hoffenheim a ton of credit.
Stevie, you disagree?
No, I mean, listen, I actually watching this, it reminded me of Liverpool against Watford. You know, the one thing you know is that eventually Bayern or any other team that goes on a run like they have, they're going to lose a game. Now, common sense will tell you that you think it's going to be a good side that just pipped them. You know, we can never predict that it's going to be a team that they're playing against that they should beat comfortably and end up getting hammered. And that's exactly all it was. They just weren't at it, let their guard down because they thought the opposition weren't going to give them any trouble, and bang, they end up with a thrashing. So, no, I don't think there's anything to worry about. The only thing that MD needs to worry about is Bayern's opponents next.
Of course, Stevie somehow gets Liverpool into this conversation. Boys, thank you very much. You take a look at the table, and it is Hoffenheim, then, who sit top of the Bundesliga. A great start to the season for them, and very much the cherry on the icing on the cake, thrashing the defending champions Bayern. Arguably the biggest result in the Premier League today, Manchester City losing at home to Leicester by 5-2. Stevie back with us, joined by Don. Stevie, in a way this is a surprise, but in a way it isn't, which is an indictment on how bad City have been defensively over the last year.
Yeah, I mean, it was always going to be Leicester sitting and breaking. with the pace of Harvey Barnes and actually they've got pace all round the team, to be quite honest. They've got a right good bunch of young players that are just, you know, that can go to a City and not be scared. And you saw that today. They defended brilliantly, and then on the break, well, another tried centre back partnership of Garcia and Ake, and another failure completely. So it's not a surprise. You know, Dan, I've always been saying that he needs to get on the field and work with these players. But I'm actually getting to the point where, do you know what? They just can't do it. You know, you can spend 24... You can be on the training field 24-7 talking and showing and coaching and teaching, hopefully, and guys don't get it. City's players, defensively, don't get it.
So what, we give Guardiola a pass, Stevie?
I'm not saying that he gets a pass. I think as far as what he was doing with his selection going forward, he shouldn't get a pass. You know, personally, I would have put Dalap in there to start with because, you know, Leicester were always going to sit tight, and that meant there wasn't going to be a lot of space. You know, they had 5-4-1 is how they had it when they didn't have the ball. So how are you supposed to find space? I mean, they couldn't throw a ball in because, I mean, not one of the forward in the front three are 6 foot tall against people like Sincho and Evans. So going forward, he absolutely doesn't get a pass. Defensively, I'm not sure what he can do with the players he has defensively because in the middle of the park, Fernandinho and Rodri are good on the ball, but they can't stop anybody getting past them because they can't run. And then you've got a back line, the two centre-halves in particular, who can't defend properly. So any team, regardless of whether it's Leicester or MDLs, is actually going to cause trouble whenever they get the ball going forward.
City has spent £345 million on defenders under Pep Guardiola, Don. Yet, I feel every time I watch a City game, I know that they are vulnerable when they're under attack. So, surely this is down to Pep, isn't it? This is down to him coaching or not coaching.
It is, Dan, and you're right. Whenever you watch Man City, it's because the way they play, it must be hard for Pep, even though he's an extremely good manager and seen as a genius. But the way City play, because they dominate the ball and because they want so many players at the top end of the pitch, and then he gets his team to play a really high line because he wants to squeeze and win the ball back, it's on the transition. It's every time they play teams like Leicester, who are brilliant. And this happened last season with Jamie Vardy when he kept running in behind. So I feel as though this is Guardiola's nightmare fixture, because he wouldn't want to say to his side, defend on your own 18-yard box, we'll make the pitch as big as possible, because then the distances in midfield for Fernandinho and Rodri are then too big, and you turn it into a sort of basketball match. Guardiola wants to stifle the opposition and put that sort of high press on, so when they win the ball back, they're fresh. But then you have people like Harvey Barnes and Jamie Vardy, which is just, he just can't manage them. I mean, it might be it might be a topic for a different day, but when Robin van Persie went to Man United for that one season and guaranteed Man United the title, it's almost like Guardiola needs to do that with Jamie Vardy and find someone that's just completely different to what he's got. But at the back, it's every time you watch them, they look vulnerable. As you said, Dan, you see a side, you see a Man City side, you're never quite sure what their best pairing is. Laporte was on the bench today. I'm still stunned that, even though in this market with 10 days left in the window, and this might force Guardiola into doing something, he needs to go into Europe and look at maybe Upamecano or someone like Koulibaly, just to try and convince everyone watching, and more so the opposition players, because when the opposition players see the Guardiola 11, they'll be rubbing their hands thinking we can score goals against them.
But what Leicester did today was no surprise, Stevie. So surely Guardiola, who's regarded as one of the best managers in the world, has got to change his tactics and got to address exactly what Leicester were going to go out in there and do. You could have said, everybody knew what was going to happen in this game, the way Leicester were going to play. So why isn't Guardiola thinking ahead?
You're saying he has to change his tactics, and you're talking about having even more people back?
I'm talking about not leaving yourself vulnerable to Leicester on the break. Every time the ball came over the top.
Dan, you've got up until Leicester went ahead 3-1, you basically had Harvey Barnes and Vardy going at the back three or four. So you've got men up. It's not like it's 2v1 against you. They've got men up. They're not good enough. Listen, we shouldn't underestimate. There are not that many centre-backs in world football that can actually dominate their line and organise their line. That's why Vincent Kompany was so good. Vincent, the players are pretty much still there. They were there when Kompany was there, but he was the one organising everybody. He was the one positioning everybody when they had the ball, so that when it broke down, they weren't getting run at pace. It's exactly what Van Dijk joined Liverpool's back line and completely transformed it. One guy. They were losing goals all over the place. Exactly how City are losing it. And that one guy turned it around because he put them in the right spots. But this City team doesn't have anybody want to do it, and they don't have the players that understand it.
But Stevie, they spent all this money.
What's he supposed to do? All he's got to do is attack.
Pounds. Surely, with all that money, they could have found someone who could come in and do exactly that. Laporte was supposed to do that, yes?
So here's the question. Here's the question. Who's picking the defenders?
Guardiola.
That's what we need to know.
Guardiola, isn't it? It's his team. Well, it's his project.
Well, that's not always
but
the case.
But you know what he's picking, though, Stevie? But you know what Guardiola's picking? Guardiola's picking people like Nathan Ake, good on the ball. John Stones, good on the ball. How about going and buying proper defenders?
I'm not going to disagree with that. Yeah. But if you think Pep is going to... turn around and change the way he plays, he's all about attack. So if he's picking the defenders, then... somebody up the stair, it's a bit ticking, they went, by the way, I'll tell you what we're doing in future. We'll organise the back players and you can do sort out going and attacking, because that's what you're all about. He absolutely is fantastic at getting teams to go forward and attack and cut defences open. But he's always struggled defensively.
When Man City play, when Man City play, they play out from the back. They use Edison to be the extra man, so they want ball playing centre-halves. That's what Guardiola wants. And you can't really knock him for what he's done in his career, the style that he's done it in. It's just with City, it's just they're sending a wrong message to everyone in the Premier League, where it's a semi-negative one, because every team has their day where I played against the great Man United side, you play against Chelsea, you play against the Invincibles, and you half stand in the tunnel and you think, oh, we've got a job on to get something out of the game. Man United lost that. The Invincibles then lost that. Chelsea then lost it when Jose moved on. And I think Pep's got to be careful that they don't lose that cloak of, you know, being invincible, because at the minute they look just a soft touch.
I tell you what, Don, it worried me a bit as well, just from someone who loves watching the league, who doesn't really have a horse in this race, that we could just see Liverpool running away with it again, because I can see City dropping points as they did last season. Liverpool started strongly. Obviously, we're only two games in. But there doesn't feel there has been necessarily a sea of change.
Hold your horses.
No, I know, Steve, but... What has changed?
Hold your horses, Danny boy.
What's changed?
Did you watch Liverpool... We've just slaughtered Man City's backline, right?
Yep.
Did you see Liverpool's backline against Leeds United?
Yes. Yeah, of course.
It was absolutely horrendous. So
we're going to say
I think we need to calm down before we start...
But Liverpool have to regress a lot. I think that's the concern, isn't it? Liverpool have to regress a lot, because there isn't anything that I've
Liverpool
seen from Manchester City who have had a bad second half against Wolves, brilliant in the first half, and then a terrible game today against Leicester.
Have you seen Liverpool defending since the start-up after the pandemic?
So this is the point, yeah? This is all about regression from Liverpool, not improvement from anyone chasing them.
Well, I mean, it's possible. That's a very negative way of looking at it. But, I mean, in fact, and again, how can we see City regressing? They can't defend. Listen, I don't want to play against Man City anytime. Tomorrow or next week or the week after that. Because they can cut you open for fun. So, nothing's changed at City. They haven't been able to defend for ages. They probably what they need to do, instead of we're killing them for buying centre backs who want to pass it, because that's the way the world is. Every single team's doing it, so City ain't going to change that. Maybe they need to start thinking about what they do in the middle of the park. Instead of having Rodri and Fernandinho, then you do what Klopp does. and get some guys in there with some real legs, some real engines, and they can just shut it down and then get it forward to the guys that can cut you open. Maybe that's the change he needs to think about.
Don, where do we stand overall where we start questioning Pep at City?
It's difficult. I mean, you've got to question him for the results that you're seeing. He's been brought in to win the Champions League. They lost the league by, as you said, 18 points and were never, ever in it. They didn't even put up a fight last season. But things have to improve. The difficulty is when we talk about Guardiola, and Stevie touches on it there about maybe changing the midfield players and shutting the game down in midfield, it's not how he plays. He didn't do that at Bayern. He didn't do that at Barca. He won't do that at Man City. Whenever you see Guardiola get interviewed after a loss, he will tell us, we should have scored more goals. That's his mantra. That's his philosophy. It's a way he's going to go about every single game. He ain't going to change. We're just going to have to see which results, negative or positive, comes along for Man City. I'm not sure you can criticise him, even though we're seeing teams, sounds like a contradiction, because you're seeing teams like Leicester five past them, but they're quite capable of playing someone next week and beating someone 6 or 7.
City fans will shout at me for not bringing up the fact that they've got a long list of injuries, including Jesus and Kun Aguero as well. Does that factor into today's performance at all, Stevie, considering they conceded 5?
Yeah, I think it did. They definitely missed them today going forward. You know, I pointed out that, you know, the only way through was to find holes where there weren't any, because there was no sort of physical presence or anything like that at all and the penalty box. And, you know, you've got Sterling playing with his back to goal. That's just not his game. So 100% you can understand. Listen, Leicester got one shot on goal in the first half. We shouldn't forget. I mean, as far as possession was concerned, they completely dominated it. So, yes, they missed their attacking players that were out. You know, your Bernardo Silvas as well that create. So, yes, okay, you can definitely give them that, but as we've been talking about already, you can't forgive the defence.
The one thing, Dan, you can't criticise Guardiola is giving 3 penalties away in the same game. I mean, that's got nothing to do with the manager.
OK, let's talk about another penalty, shall we? Spurs against Newcastle, Spurs 1-0 up. And, of course, we talked yesterday a lot about the handball that was given in the Everton-Crystal Palace game. Stevie said that it was a handball, right, that it was the right decision, which leads us then to 24 hours later. Stevie, was this the right decision, the handball given against Eric Dier?
Absolutely not. And I'll tell you why. Because I told you yesterday that the fact that Ward was 3 foot away from the ball and his opponent is why I said it was a penalty. And the reason I'm saying this is not a penalty is because Eric Dier is about 6 inches. His body's about 6 inches away from Andy Carroll. And his arms away from his body, yes, because he's in the air. And that's why it's not a penalty. I can't make it any clearer than that. It's all about how close you are to your opponent. And if you're 6 inches away and the ball hits your arm, that's not a penalty.
Don?
I was at Selhurst Park yesterday when the Joel Ward penalty got given. And I said in the commentary, I'd be stunned if it was given. And I looked at the referee when he went to the monitor and gave the penalty. And I was really close from from the gantry to people like Andros Townsend and Wilf Zaha and Joel Ward. And they sort of laughed with... It's a little bit of embarrassment, really, because the players know, Dan, when you play the game, when you are an athlete, go back to Victor Lindelof last week. All Victor Lindelof was guilty of was running, which therefore his arms are in a natural direction, not unnatural, a natural running gait. That gets given as a penalty. Joel Ward, the ball got headed off him from Luca Dean from a yard away. You can't react. You can't get your hand out of the way. And then the one today that we've seen in the Spurs game. I'm not sure if you're playing on the pitch now what you can actually do when someone hits a ball off your arm for 1 yard, 2 yard, 3 yards away. It's impossible. You've got no reaction time whatsoever.
Go on, Stevie.
No, it wasn't a yard away because he wasn't touch tight. You know, and I'm coming from a point of where they have to decide on something. And why not that? A proper defender is touch tight. And if you're touch tight, then it can't be a penalty. If you're further away, then it's a penalty. You know, there has to be some sort of conclusion to this, because it's just, It seems we're all getting further and further apart, whether one's a penalty or not. We need to come to some sort of conclusion and say, right, try and get this down to something pretty straightforward. And that, to me, is straightforward. If you're touched tight, it's not a penalty. If you're not, if you're any further distance away, it is.
But Stevie, how would you feel, Stevie, if I'm playing against you and I back you up inside the 18-yard box and I'm 2 yards away? Because I tell you what, we're going to see it. We're going to see a player deliberately kick the ball off a defender's arm, and that'll get given as a penalty.
Oh, don't start
how,
that.
How would you, how
I've
would
had
you
that before.
Then?
Don, I'm not being funny. Well, seriously, so you're going to be in the penalty box, and the only thing in your mind is to try and kick it onto the hand of the guy that you're playing against. Come on, don't give me that nonsense.
I've heard a couple of people saying that. Box, Stevie, and I'm not in front of goal. The 18-yard box is quite big, and I've got you in an area where I can't score from. I've got you out wide in the 18-yard box. I can't score. I'm in a blind alley. Oh, I know what I'll do. I'll clip it off Stevie's hand, and I'll hope when they go to 3 yards,
right, well,
they give
what.
A penalty.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'd love to count on one hand how many players are going to try that. And B, if you can do that without it being so bleeding obvious, then you're having a laugh.
Well, then the referees won't know. I could just say to a referee, I tried to cross it, ref.
No, you're not.
I say it in jest. I'm deliberately
kicking the ball at the guy's arm.
Don, how do you?
Yeah, I would do that.
How do you fix it then, Don? How do you fix this handball controversy?
I sure you would.
Well, listen, I'm not the oracle on it, Dan, but I think what we've got to try and do when IFAB are having all these meetings is have an ex-professional on board.
There are lots of it's made up mostly of ex-professionals, isn't it? There's a lot of them there. Van Basten is there. You know, Shaka Hislop was there until they realised that he was a goalkeeper.
But surely if you say to Van Basten, you show him the Victor Lindelof handball, do you think in your heart of hearts, does this sit right with you?
So how do you, as Don Hutchinson, how do you fix it?
I think we've got to go back, Dan, and we think we've got to go back to what the referees think is an intentional handball or an accidental handball. Joel Ward was an accidental handball. Eric Dyer, accidental handball. Victor Lindelof, accidental handball.
But the problem with that is, isn't the whole issue, and what everyone was saying for years, is we want consistency from the officials. So consistently now they're coming in and they're making these decisions. The issue that we always had with the rule that you're describing was the fact that it's just subjective. Like, how do you really know if a player intended? You can't. You can't put them up to a lie detector test halfway through a match. So this is the issue, isn't it? And it always is going to be with a handball rule.
Yeah, but didn't when you look back at the referees either making that decision correctly or wrongly, didn't that sort of sit better with you where you think, well, the referees made an honest assessment there? The referees now in Europe are governed by IFAB and the governing bodies to give penalties. Listen, a referee would never tell you, but if you sat down with a referee and said to them, do you think Lindelof was handball? Do you think Joel Ward was handball? Do you think Eric Dyer was handball? Off the record, they'll probably say no. But that's the laws and the rules that they've got to go by. So I don't blame the officials for giving them. It's the laws and the governing bodies for introducing this type of rule.
Stevie?
So there you go. Make the law about distance. And you can't. Everybody can. You know, some people will like it, and some people won't like it. The way that, you know, some people didn't like it was down to the ref's interpretation of whether it was if it was meant or not. Then if we can get rid of the interpretation and make a rule, what's wrong with distance? You know, I called it touch tight. Make it whatever. If you're within a certain distance, then it can't be a penalty.
I'm still kicking off your hand.
And then you can't. And then there's no argument. It's like the offside rule drawing a line. You can't argue with it. Sorry?
Well, you can because what's the distance? If you say a yard, what happens if it's a yard and a half?
Well, you can't. Hey, what do you think VAR's for? Are you telling me VAR can't measure a distance? So there you go. There's straight away. I'm not saying everybody's going to agree
with
that. I'm not saying it's right, and I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying it's a straightforward outcome instead of what we're doing now of everybody thinking one thing or another.
Thank you very much, boys. I'm pretty sure this is the last time we're ever going to discuss this. So thank you very much for that. I think we've tied a nice bow over the handball rule. Just taking a look at some of the other results from today. Leeds United made it 2 wins out of 3, a 1-0 victory away over Sheffield United, who've struggled to start the season. And in the late game, big surprise, West Ham thrashing Wolves 4-0.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
Barca kicked off their La Liga campaign in some style. A 4-0 victory over Villarreal. All of those goals coming in the first half. Gab Marcotti and Ali Moreno with me to look back at Ronald Koeman's first game in charge. Ali, let's face it, couldn't have gone much better.
Yeah, and let's just talk about the first half. The second half didn't even happen, to be quite honest with you. The game was over in the first 45 minutes, and then the second half was merely an exercise in fitness. I would tell you that a couple of things that are encouraging for Barcelona fans and really Barcelona players is we have mentioned time and time again, and certainly over the last couple of seasons, the dependency of this team on Lionel Messi, that he has to be the one that creates a chance and finishes the chance, that he is the one that has to play the ball out wide and get the ball back, dribble a couple of guys, and then score a goal. Today, in the first couple of goals, what we saw was zero involvement from Lionel Messi. And the sequence of plays start deep in the defensive area for Barcelona, and from there, Clement Lenglet finds a ball over the top to Jordi Alba, then they cut back to Ansu Fati. Then the second goal, similarly, Clement Lenglet with a through ball that breaks the line of pressure. You have Coutinho then running with the ball for 30, 40 yards, gets it set up. He actually looks at Lionel Messi to the right-hand side and does the impossible, does the incredible, and makes an incredible decision himself and saying, no, I'm not going to play to Lionel Messi. I'm actually going to play to the guy who's in a better position. And Ansu Fati scores his second goal. And to me, that just gives you an idea that, okay, this team, at least on this very small sample, can score goals without the involvement of Lionel Messi. And if he is going to play a false nine, which really became like a false nine, false seven, false 11, false 10, because there is no real position for Lionel Messi, he just goes wherever he wants to, then you're not going to have a real presence in the attack in the 18-yard box. Then goals are going to have to come from everywhere. And in this case, Ansu Fati had an outstanding match, an outstanding first 45 minutes, scores a couple of goals, and Barcelona were flying.
Yeah, Ansu Fati, superb, Gab.
Oh, Fati was tremendous. I think a combination of Ansu Fati and Villarreal's defensive ineptitude, because this was a really, really poor performance from Villarreal. Very disappointing. I think that helped see them through to that 4-0 victory. I agree with Ali on Messi. More broadly, I don't know how much we can learn about Barcelona here, especially how this whole setup is going to work. When you look, on the right-hand side, there were long stretches when it was basically, Sergio Roberto by himself, because everybody naturally got sucked into the middle or indeed actually the center left. So there's still a lot to work on. I think, though, it was important, given what we saw from Messi, of course, earlier with the Instagram post and whatnot. It was critical that they get, a big win, that they hit the ground early, and now they can focus on that and take some of the pressure off Koeman. And Koeman can now get to work, but he still has a lot of work to do, I think, to turn this into a credible team.
Ali, the big question, obviously, how was Messi's body language?
Well, with the freedom that he had on the field to do really what he wanted whenever he wanted to, and at times being the guy who's supposed to be the highest up the field, what we saw from Lionel Messi was a whole lot of walking. But it's a whole lot of walking that tells you some other people are the ones that are going to create the chances, and that indeed he's going to be in a more advanced position. So in regards to his body language, if you will, it was fine. It was fine. It's no different than what we have seen from Lionel Messi, where he spends a lot of time during matches just kind of floating around, finding his own spaces, coming to the ball when he wants to, or going away from the ball when he wants to. There was nothing about Lionel Messi that you would say, oh, look at him. That was a message to the board there. That was a message to Bartomeu. None of that was going on. I think in the end, whenever the game starts, you're going to see a professional performance from Lionel Messi. It's what you have seen over the course of his career. And I don't think this year is going to be any different.
And of course, Ali, it wasn't really supposed to be like this, especially what we saw happen earlier in the day in the Spanish capital, because Luis Suarez came on and just had this dream 20 minutes for Atleti, an exceptional assist, then scored two goals. It was supposed to be the big kind of, ha-ha, you should have got rid of me, Barcelona, from him. What a performance, Ali. Atleti scored six goals. What's going on in this world?
And from the moment he stepped on the field, and he played a grand total of 24 minutes, the moment he stepped on the field, there was a different energy to the game. And let's not forget that Joao Felix was outstanding during the day. But he was overshadowed by the fact that Luis Suarez comes on, and yeah, now you have a big-time striker and a guy who just carries attention wherever he goes. His first touch is an assist. And you think, well, it can't get any better than that. No, it does get better because then his movement was so good. And the one and two touches that he was taking, and then the finish with the header was fantastic. And then the one that he hits off the post and comes back and he scores the second goal. Again, it's all instinct. It's all the talent that we have seen time and time again from Luis Suarez. A guy who, when he's healthy, he's going to finish chances and he's going to be on the field. And as much as Diego Costa scored a goal today, well, the days of Diego Costa starting for this team are slowly coming to an end. In fact, quickly coming to an end, because the combination of Joao Felix and Luis Suarez in that attacking half for Atletico Madrid makes this team so, so very dangerous.
It was one of the biggest disappointments, wasn't it, last season, Gab, the fact that Joao Felix just didn't live up to any sort of expectation. And I know it's only one game, but this is great to see him linking up with Suarez like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as Ali hinted, I mean, not just linking up with Suarez, but all the work he did before Luis Suarez came on. You know, last season was a year that Simeone had said, it hinted that we were going to see a different Atleti, an Atleti that was more on the ball, an Atleti that played higher up the pitch, committed more people forward. For different reasons, it didn't pan out that way last year. I think this year it has to be that way. I think it suits João Félix as well. Because he's one of those guys, yeah, he likes the wide spaces, but he also likes to have people around him, people to play off of. And I think, you know, we saw that before Luis Suarez came on from Atleti. Now, Granada, not particularly good, but I think that part is encouraging. But Simeone is going to have to get them to play this way, you know, even in games when they don't have all the ball, even when the opposition is tougher. I think there's still a long way to go, but this is certainly encouraging.
Let's jump to massive conclusions, shall we, Ali?
Can I just stay down for a second?
Yep.
And I cannot believe I'm saying this when I'm talking about Atletico Madrid. They were fun.
Whoa.
They were fun to watch.
Wow.
They were entertaining to watch. They were getting the ball in transition and going forward. And Joao Felix was getting the ball in the middle of the field and was going at people and popping the ball over people's head and cutting the ball back, a little back heel and a little drag back action. They were exciting to watch. Yes, Atletico Madrid is a fun team to watch. Get used to that.
Are they going to win the title?
Based on what we have seen so far, that I think right now,
that's it.
What we have seen, they were the most exciting and complete team of the top three teams in La Liga. And when we talk about the top three teams, it's of course Real Madrid, Barcelona, and Atletico Madrid. But what we have seen, the performance of Atletico Madrid was outstanding.
Title chances, Gab?
Oh, I think they definitely have a shot. I mean, I would still lean Real Madrid, but if you want percentages, maybe I'll give them a 30%, 35%. Why not?
Wait. Now what? Now you've led me down the road to ask you the other percentages, because then surely Barcelona will be third in your percentage.
For me, yeah, they are third.
Oh, wow, really?
For me, there's a greater chance of of Atleti winning the title than Barcelona. Based again, based on where we are, based on what we've seen, I have Real Madrid as slight favorites, but then, yeah, it goes Atleti and then Barca.
Oh, wow. Ali, I now have to get your percentages.
I don't know why we're getting into percentages after one game.
It's us, Ali. It's what we do.
I'll take the 45 minutes from Barcelona, and I'll take that as a potential, as a possibility. If you get the full productivity from Ansu Fati like you did today, and you get Lionel Messi in a more advanced position, and you get the double pivot working together, I think Barcelona in the first 45 minutes is something that you can hang on to and say, yeah, this team can be good enough. But in order for that to work, this team has to be together. And we know that right now in Barcelona, things can go either way. They can either blow up or they can go so very well and be a great comeback story.
I take Real Madrid and VAR all day, every day. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Let's take a look then at all the results, shall we, from the weekend. Plenty of goals and action around Sevilla with a 3-1 victory away against Cadiz. Meanwhile, 1-1 between Valladolid and Celta Vigo. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Well, let's focus on what happened in Italy today then. It finished Roma 2, Juventus 2. Gab Marcotti with us. Gab, I suppose from a Juve perspective, 2-1 down to 10 men, you take 2-2.
Yeah, I mean, that's one way to look at it. And you can look at the fact that when you were down to 10 men, you actually, you played well. But it's that first hour, which I think should be concerning because, you know, Roma have had a pretty rough week leading up to this. Obviously, the Milik deal not going through, Dzeko staying, pressure mounting on Fonseca, the whole nonsense with Diawara being incorrectly registered, which meant that they lost a point at Verona. So, you know, when they went out there, I thought they took the game to Juve. Dzeko certainly missed at least two clear-cut chances to put this game out of reach. And then, like, in the last half hour, when they have the man advantage, it was almost as if they decided, well, let's sit on this lead. And that's a very dangerous thing to do against Juve at all times because, you know, Juve kind of, they just kind of never go away, right? And whether it's, you know, somebody falling in the box or an individual moment of brilliance, in this case, it was Cristiano Ronaldo doing his, you know, 45-second hang time thing. a tremendous, tremendous header of the ball. And that was that. And then suddenly it was 2-2. And I think Roma, you know, left Giroud 2 points drop. They would have taken 2-2 ahead before the game. But given the way the game unfolded, I think, you know, not a happy night in Rome today.
Gab, how does he stay in the air for so long?
I have no idea. I mean, I think the point of impact for the header, I think it was calculated at something like 2 meters and 28 centimeters. I'm going to guess that's round about 7'5", 7'6", something like that. It's not just how high he leaps. It's the fact that he seems to stand up, to just stay up in the air. And he kind of, while he's floating in the air, he seems to sort of move his neck so that he can perfectly impact the ball and guide it. Whatever. I mean, the guy is simply a freak of nature and one of the greatest headers of the ball I think the game has ever seen.
He certainly got his boss out of jail slightly. Pirlo's honeymoon period over after the great opening week. Wrote his dissertation. Whoa, it's amazing. Reality struck today.
Yeah, I wouldn't say the honeymoon is over, but I think there are certain home truths. So in this game, he stuck with the same system as last time. He inserted Morata up front with Cristiano, Ramsey in behind, and he moved Kulusevski to wing back. Whereas in the last game at wing back, you had this kid Frabotta, who's young, but actually is a fullback and will follow instructions. Kulusevski is a different sort of player. Never really played that position much before, and he's a much more forward-minded player. And when you commit so many men forward the way they do, well, your back three are going to be left exposed to the counterattack. Roma broke very well. I thought Mkhitaryan had a very good game. Veretout had a good game. Some sharp passing, and then all of a sudden, you had Chiellini and Bonucci having to defend, and Danilo having to defend one-on-one in open spaces. And that's always risky. I think this is some stuff that they need to work on, whether it's different defensive movements, if they're going to play that way, or, frankly, a more mobile defender in there in the three. I don't think Chiellini's going to be able to play every game this season. I mean, he missed, obviously, injured almost all of last season. We might see some more of Demiral, perhaps. And obviously, you've got Matthijs de Ligt to come back in November. Mm. But, this is a gamble. Now, Pirlo believes in playing this way, believes in defending from the front. Well, if you're going to do that, you need to create more chances and create more shots when you are in the final third and do a better job hanging onto the ball, do a better job snuffing out the transitions before the opposition get the ball into your half. And I think, this is still going to come with training. He has not had a long time with these players. So the honeymoon, I don't think, is over yet. It's just an acknowledgement that there is a lot of work to do.
And there is more vulnerability there, you feel, as well, Gab, which, of course, could impact us when it comes to the title race next year.
Well, look, I mean, I think there was always going to be more vulnerability because, when you look at this, Juventus this season, effectively, adding Morata, Weston McKennie, and Kulusevski, and going with a rookie coach, and then you look at Inter, and obviously what they spent, or the players they added with the likes of Hakimi and Vidal, and so obviously, and Kolarov, Inter obviously reloading, and Juventus didn't end the season well. So it was always going to be more wide open this year, and obviously other contenders, whether it's Lazio or Atalanta. I think Juventus took this on board. I think Juventus are comfortable with the transition year. I think they want to transition to a different sort of player, sort of playing, while also making sure that they get the best out of Cristiano. Cristiano likes having players around him, and this is part of what Pirlo has pledged to do with his system. The difficulty is you got to get the balance right at the other end. And again, it doesn't mean you have to be more defensive. It just means you have to work on certain things defensively because Bonucci and Chiellini are tremendous defenders, even though they're older, but they're not used to defending in these circumstances. And, it's going to be a process for them as well.
Meanwhile, Gab, Milan fans have suffered more than most yet off the back of that fine end to the last season. And a comfortable, non-eventful, very nice win again this weekend. A bit of consistency, something that they've been desperate for so long.
And I don't know if you're queuing me up for the Zlatan joke about how, COVID got Zlatan rather than the other way around. But I think it was important. It was important for them to show that, they're not Zlatan dependent. It was important on the back of that game on Thursday night against Bodo Glimt, who, really took them to the wire. In the end, it was a 3-2 victory, but obviously a lot more jitters than Milan would have wanted. I think it's important. When you're dropping Tonali into a midfield like this, it's going to take, it's going to take time for everything to work. And it's going to take time, I think, for the team to adjust to playing with Zlatan and without Zlatan. So, again, not much in the way of opposition today, but they got the job done and they're growing.
Napoli, final word on them, 6-0, Gab.
Gattuso still not happy afterwards. He said, oh, there was a lack of balance, blah, blah, blah.
Just, I don't know. You won 6-0.
Even Chucky Lozano scored 2 goals. But tremendous performance again from Victor Osimhen. He hasn't scored in his first 2 games, but he has done everything else so far. The guy is walking on air in Naples. Early, I know. But so far, looks to be one of the signings of the summer, if not the signing of the summer in Serie A. One of the, a tremendous, tremendously exciting striker.
Gab Marcotti, as always, thank you so much for your thoughts. Just a reminder then of all the results that we saw this week. And the week concludes tomorrow, live on ESPN Plus at 2:40, Bologna taking on Parma.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. What a brilliant weekend of football. And of course, it continues tomorrow as well. Liverpool are taking on Arsenal. We'll be back then to discuss that. But that's not the end of today's show. Extra time, of course, coming up. Ali and Gab answering your tweets. Welcome into Extra Time. I tell you what, it's been just the most extraordinary weekend of football right across the board, which leads us beautifully, Ali and Gab, to our first question, which is, what was the biggest shock result of the weekend?
Ooh.
Gab.
You know, I would have gone with City, although having seen their collapse in the second half against Wolves on Monday, and obviously they got away with it, maybe that wasn't as big a shock as Bayern against Hoffenheim.
Yep.
Because let's face it, who gets excited about the Hoff, right? And, you know, for them to lose their first game, what, since 2019? Since, I think it was December 7th, 2019?
Yep. 23 straight wins coming into this.
Yeah, and I think that's in the Bundesliga alone, or maybe not. Maybe that's every all competition. Who knows? But regardless, nobody expected this.
No, Bayern, the biggest shock for you. Obviously, some saying UEFA Super Cup hangover. It could be expected, Ali. You could give them a pass.
It's Manchester City, and Leicester dropping 5 goals from Manchester City. If Leicester beats Manchester City, it's not so much a surprise. It's just the manner in which Leicester absolutely, completely destroyed Manchester City. After Manchester City went up 1-0, you're thinking, there you go. Everything's fine. Smooth. Yeah. And then the drop-off was ridiculous, and the upswing by Leicester was also ridiculous. It was an outstanding performance from Leicester, but one that Manchester City and Manchester City fans should be somewhat embarrassed about.
What a lovely segue into the next question. Is Pep Guardiola going to last at City, Gav?
Well, he has a contract until the end of the season. I think Pep Guardiola will decide himself when he leaves Manchester City. And whether it's at the end of this season, whether he extends it or not, I still think it's going to be his call and really nobody else's. But it is worrying because, like I said, he's got a bunch of players out. We saw this happen against Wolves. They could have easily conceded 4 or 5 to Wolves on Monday, and it's not an exaggeration. However, we're just not used to seeing this. But you know, let's see him when he's got all his players fit, and let's judge him then, before we go and sack him in September.
But even when he has all his players fit, Ali, there's always this vulnerability when it comes to Pep's Manchester City side when they have to defend.
And undoubtedly, they have to defend because they haven't been nearly as good with their possession of the ball and the attacking half. So then they commit all these numbers forward, they lose the ball in a bad area, now other teams are going the other way, and they just don't have either the recovery speed or the discipline to get back and defend. And even when they get back and defend, they haven't proven to be good enough in 1v1 situations to defend. And so for me, you see it happen time and time again, and you think, well, they're going to learn from it. Well, they're going to learn from it. Well, they're going to learn from it. But if it continues to happen, then obviously it's not either stressed enough by the coaching staff, including Pep Guardiola, or it's something that is not part of the philosophy. Mm. And they concentrate and focus on what's going on, going in this direction, but not going backwards. And to me, if you're not good in possession and you turn the ball in bad areas and you've committed numbers forward, you're asking for trouble. And for Manchester City, it just seems to happen all too often.
Do any of you know anything about Alex Telles? Should United fans be excited that we might be able to sign him? Gab, I'm sure you know about him. You know everything.
I'm familiar with Alex Telles. Alex Telles is one of those people who is permanently linked to big clubs and big moves over the years. He's an attacking wingback who is a talented attacking wingback.
Should we be excited, Gab? Is he the savior for United?
I don't think it's going to be Alex Telles alone. You know, I don't think this is a Bruno Fernandes situation. I think United's issues probably have more to do with center back, frankly, than they do left back. Although obviously they can upgrade, they could use an upgrade in both positions. But I think some of what we saw, you know, isn't going to be solved by taking Luke Shaw out and putting another guy in there. I think the issues run far deeper than that.
Here we go then. Obviously a big talking point this weekend, the old handball rule. Could indirect free kicks for unintentional handball in the box solve the handball crisis as per handled back passes, Ali?
No. Because the fact that you say unintentional, well, everybody could argue that every handball is unintentional and nobody goes on the field thinking, you know what, I'll tell you something, this is what I'm going to do today. I'm going to stick my arm out and hope that the ball hits me. Nobody actually thinks that. And so unintentional, it's the sort of terminology that just gives referees wiggle room, if you will. To me, it's getting out of control. If the arm is away from the body and the ball hits the arm, then it's a handball. If it impacts the progress of the attacking player or impacts the play, it's a handball. And go from there. And then from then on, use some common sense. But that part of common sense is also up to interpretation. So my common sense may be different than Gas and maybe different than yours. And so at that point is when we get into the slippery slope. Okay, now we're going to go check VAR. When you see VAR and you see the ball hitting the arm, how is the referee not going to call a penalty?
So the Eric Dier, for example, today, Ali, do you think it was a penalty?
Yeah, I think it's a penalty. And I know people are in this position now where you just want to take a shot at VAR. You just want to take a shot at the technology. You just want to devalue what we have available. And I just think what we all want is a little bit of consistency. And yesterday in the Crystal Palace Everton game, in two instances in which similarly it felt like it was both instances were handballs and both instances would have been penalties. One was given and one was not. Mm. That's within one game, so it's the same refereeing crew and it's the same VAR official, and yet we don't come to the same conclusion on very similar plays. That to me is the thing that we should be arguing about.
Cap?
Look, I'm with Ali here. I think, you know, we make it seem as if all of a sudden there's this huge issue. There isn't. There wasn't the first time around. It's not like this happens every game. These are unusual situations. The law is actually pretty clear the way it was rewritten. There is still room for discretion for the referee. It looked to me on the Eric Dyer one, looked to me like his arm was above his head. If I get the whole thing about natural motion, whatever, they said, like, no matter when you jump, your arm should never be up above your head. And if it is up above your head and the ball strikes it, then it's a handball. That seems to be pretty clear. I think defenders can adjust on that. It's a different issue with that one. I think it was some suggestion that maybe Dyer was pushed, which is why he was so uncoordinated. And again, that's why you have VAR. The referee should look at it, take it into account. Was Dyer on balance, and take that into account? Referees still have discretion. People are having a go at the law. No, but remember, referees still have to interpret within that law. Yesterday, the Joel Ward one, you know, that comes down to the fact, is his arm away from his body or not? Is he making himself bigger, whether intentionally or not? The referee felt that he was. For me, I'm not sure why Joel Ward's arm needed to be all the way out there. I think, you know, defenders will get used to this. We've had this before. Rules have changed in the game before. You know, you used to be tons of shirt pulling on every set piece. Now, people are cracking down on it, and people stop doing it. People stop tackling from behind. People got adjusted to the back pass, for example. You know, and we've seen it in other sports that people have adjusted. I don't think it's a huge ask. The reason we're in this situation is because the situation that we had before, we had referees, players, fans, and those of us in the media continuously attacking and bemoaning the lack of consistency, going and harassing referees, in some cases threatening referees, and that's just not acceptable. You know, we in the sport created this situation, and so now we have consistency. And I think it's not that big an adjustment for people to deal with it. They have the exact same laws, by the way, in the Bundesliga. Funny how those guys seem to have adapted to it. Those guys don't seem to go and freak out and blame the law. No, they get on with it and they learn how to defend differently.
Could Leicester City be in the conversation for title race after beating City today, Ali?
No.
Gab?
It's going to take a lot more. Although, mind you, with the Undertaker now on board, it's a whole new ball.
Oh, you love that, Gab, with your WWE ways. Is the Undertaker still going? How many Undertakers have there been?
Well, obviously there was fake Undertaker, who was really Kane. I think I can reveal this. No, look, they're not in a conversation, not yet anyway, for the title. I still think defensively, you know, Soyuncu is a monster. I don't know if Evan's can hang in there the whole season and produce at a high level. Let's wait. Let's just let them enjoy the win without you putting pressure on Brendan Rodgers and saying he must deliver the title now.
Is the Undertaker still around?
Is he still going? Yeah, that's what I wanted to know, Gab. Is he still going?
I don't follow WWE as closely as I once did. I couldn't tell you.
I remember. Do you remember like the coffin match where it was the Undertaker against Yokozuna? The old A was the game in the coffin. Oh, who was the guy? Paul Bearer at the side. Oh, these are the days. There we go. Right. Will the crew admit Gab was right about Bayern? I'd be happy if Ali admits he was 100% wrong, saying Bayern were good to go. It's off the back of Gab's article where he said that Bayern were going to struggle this season because they lacked strength in depth, Ali.
Right. And following that conversation, they went on and won the European Super Cup. And then they had a difficult performance against Hoffenheim. I can tell you this, when they said they're good to go, they were, what do you mean good to go? They were coming off beating Schalke 20-0. So it's, am I supposed to admit that I was wrong because Bayern Munich lost the game? I'm just saying.
No, I think the argument, all right, 1-11, Bayern may well be the best team in the world or close to it.
It's been a long week.
But
Read the article.
Look, Lewandowski needs to rest, and you play Xerxes, it's not the same thing, is it?
It is definitely definitely not the same thing, no.
Yeah. It's the half. The half is the problem.
The half. You need the Undertaker back.
Hey, by the way, German people get excited about the Hof.
Yes. Yeah. There we go. That is it. We are done for the day. Thank you, as always, for joining us. Tomorrow, Liverpool take on Arsenal. That should be good.